Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and a welcome to Off the Beat and Track Podcast. I'm your host, I'm Stu Whiffin. It's another week, therefore it's another episode. Today's episode, I talked to Francis Leung. I was aware of his previous work in Woo Life and got approached to see if I would talk to him about his current music. And of course, I was thrilled to say yes. And as this podcast unfolds, we have a lot of mutual love for several of the same bands, which we go in on. Before we go in on any kind of chat with Francis Leung, just a few thank yous ahead of that. So just quickly, thank you to Scroobius Pip and everybody at the Distraction Pieces Network. Thank you to 76 for producing this podcast. And thank you to you lot for continuing to support Off the Beaten Track. It's a real luxury for me to get to be able to sit and talk about music and creativity with an array of really wonderful and lovely people. And throughout the last sort of 2 years, I've been absolutely privileged to be able to do that. And the fact that people listen to it and get joy from it is such a bonus. So thank you for supporting Off the Beaten Track podcast. Also, if this is your first time listening, when you get to the end of this Ace chat, go and have a look in the archives, because you can hear me speaking to artists as diverse as Foo Fighters to Maxine Peake through to James Acaster, Ed Gamble, Fatboy Slim, Tommy Lee of Motley Crue, Public Enemy, Suede, Amanda Abington. The list goes on and on and on. Butch Vig, the producer. Go get stuck in, because there's nearly 300 episodes now of Natters with comedians, musicians, producers, actors, artists. Go in there and have a rummage, and I'm sure you'll find loads of chats that will tickle your fancy. Also, if you'd like to support the podcast, give us a like, love, share, and a retweet and all of that. We're on all the socials. And as well as that, if you'd like to support in any other way, then the best way to do that is on Patreon. I have a Patreon page that accompanies this podcast, and each week I put up exclusive episodes over there and radio shows and video episodes and such. So you can find out about that and everything else I've been wittering on about at www.offthebeatandtrackpodcast.com. Right, that's that bit done. Please enjoy Off the Beaten Track Podcast with Francis Leung. Right, I've got to take a quick break in this podcast because I've got some super exciting news. Off the Beaten Track Podcast is proud to go into partnership with the Cacao Bar from Hotel Chocolat. That's right. The Cacao Bar is not a chocolate bar. It's all the best bits of a chocolate bar put into a really exciting new alcoholic range. That's right. Gin, vodka, and a beautiful range of cream liqueurs. So one of the big bonuses of this partnership is obviously I'm super thrilled to have Hotel Chocolat working with us, but they sent me a great big box of this stuff. And I'm telling you, it's amazing. Go and check it out. www.hotelchocolat.com or over on the socials at Hotel Chocolat. But yeah, in the coming months, there's going to be opportunities for you to get involved with competitions with us, to win bottles of stuff. There's loads of exciting things coming soon, and I can't be more happy to say that this podcast is in partnership with the Cacao Bar from Hotel Chocolat. All right, let's get back to the podcast.
It's Off the Beat and Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu, with him.
Okay, we are recording. Joining me today, Francis Lung. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm okay. Yeah, not too bad. Well, thanks for giving up your time today to come and talk on the podcast. It's much appreciated.
Of course.
Before we get into your song picks and stuff, I just want to have the obvious question, which it's inevitable that, you know, the pandemic has to enter in every possible conversation seems to be happening over the last year. But I'm always intrigued to know how you found the last. I should also point out we're recording this on the 29th of April, 21. So I just wonder how you found the last year and a bit, both personally and as an artist.
It's been really strange, just like it has been for everybody. I guess as an artist, you maybe have this sort of pressure to perform almost. It's like a lot of musicians or artists maybe wish to have more time to do things. There's never enough time to get things done. And then suddenly you have a pandemic where you have to stay inside all the time. And there's this pressure to finally do something with that time. And I definitely felt that. I felt it quite hard, really, but I just sort of tried to thrive on it, and I tried to make the most of it, I guess.
Did that ever felt forced, though? Like, as you said, artists often crave that opportunity to have some time, and obviously it was thrust upon us. And did it almost feel at any point like, right, well, I've got to do it now because the time is here. We didn't know how long this pandemic was going to go on for, obviously. So did you feel a weight of, right, I better do something? Or whenever you find time, are you just quite happy to kind of start creating?
Well, I mean, I'm always quite hungry for that sort of thing anyway. So,
yeah.
And it's funny, really, because my work, I'm an English teacher. My work didn't really stop during the pandemic at all, because everything was already based online. So like with ESL these days, a lot of the careers, you don't actually teach anyone in person. So my life didn't change that much in that respect. The only difference was that I thought, well, other people have the time to do more things, so maybe I should be doing it too.
Yeah.
I think like I definitely filled my time up. Like I started going back through old songs, and I started doing live streams where I was reinterpreting my music, and an EP came out of that because I had to do like stripped back versions of songs because the only concerts I could do were on Instagram Live or something.
Sure.
And so, yeah, I found myself creating an EP for no reason that I probably wouldn't have done otherwise.
Yeah.
And
let's start today's playlist, and I'm going to ask you, please, for track one, to tell me the song that you regard as having the greatest ever intro, please.
So that would be Styrofoam by Fugazi, and I've chosen this one as my favorite ever intro. It's a really tough question, by the way.
Yeah. Everybody says this is a tough one.
It's a tough one, but a really good one. And I chose it because it was one of the first things that came to mind, and I didn't expect it to be my choice. But it reminds me of being a kid and watching a skate video called Feedback. It's a trans world skate video for anyone that does skate, and it's with Arto Saari and Jeff Rowley, two skaters that I like a lot. And it's such a great intro because it just gets me so fired up. Like when I was growing up, I listened to almost exclusively like hardcore punk rock and post-hardcore and stuff. And it just transports me. And I want to just like run out of my door and just like skate down the street. And I don't know, there isn't any other music that really gives me that kind of like adrenaline rush. So I guess that's what makes a great intro for me, something that gets me ready for something, you know.
So what came first, skating or hardcore?
Skating, it's, definitely.
Like, do you mind me asking how old you are?
Yeah, I'm 31.
Okay, because I'm 48, and in the early 90s, when I would have been listening to Fugazi and skating, there was... You was exposed to so much exciting music through these bootlegged skate VHSs that were being passed around. And as much as you'd be watching the skating, you'd be like, fuck, what's this? What's this song? And then you'd literally go to your record store and go, have you got this by? And it's like, no, can you get it over? Can you get it imported? It was like, it was such... Because music's so accessible now, back then it was such a journey to get anything. And to just hear something on a... Obviously, you just Shazam it now, and it's, oh, it's that. I know exactly what that is. And it was just them skate videos. And I had Dainton from Dirty Sanchez on this podcast, who's a huge skater. And he was just going off on so many of his song choices, all referenced a different skate video. And it was the impact on that... It's huge and can't be understated. Certainly, like, you know, and the fact that, like, you know, you're 17 years younger than me and it still kind of found its way then. I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, and I think initially I really got into music because it reminded me of skate videos that I watched.
Yeah,
I think skating was like my first love as a kid. And so I would listen to the music to remind me of the person that was skating and the part, and it would get me excited to go and skate. And then eventually it sort of, although I've skated to this day, I still love skateboarding, the music sort of eclipsed it when I started to play it myself, because I started to understand a little bit what went into making it. And then it wasn't so much, it was kind of like, oh, what are they doing there? How's he doing that? I wish I could do that. Maybe in a similar way to watching skate videos, like, what the hell is he doing there? I wish I could make that happen.
Wonderful. Well, for track two, I'm going to ask you, I'm going to take you back and ask you to tell me, please, the first song you remember hearing that had an emotional impact on you, please.
So this is going way back to when I was, I don't know, I think I was maybe like 5 or 6. Probably got the maths wrong, but it's Breathe by The Prodigy. And my brother and my sister were really, really into The Prodigy as they were like young, maybe preteens. And yeah, it was just like their favorite group. And being the youngest of three, I just sort of soaked up all their influences. And I remember listening to The Prodigy on headphones with my big sister and us just telling each other what we imagined when we were listening to it. And being, you know, 6 years old or whatever, I just imagined like robots, huge scorpions made out of metal. I remember them sort of battling each other. It was probably because I was really obsessed with Power Rangers at the time. But I guess like now I would have a different mental image maybe, but that was about as powerful a mental image I could have back then, you know, like the enemies fighting each other in Power Rangers. But I felt it so deeply, even though it seems so silly now. And I'll always remember that.
And what would the emotion have been?
Exhilaration. Okay. I think a lot of the early feelings that I was looking for in music was like this kind of exhilaration.
Yeah.
Because it's a little bit like drum and bass. It's almost like funky. Like it's like got like a breakbeat in there, and it's like loud and aggressive and very I don't know, euphoric.
Yeah. So whereabouts was home then? Whereabouts was you listening to this?
Bury in Manchester, North Manchester.
How was that growing up?
Great, I guess. I mean, I can't complain. It's just really quite normal. Went to a Catholic school, but we weren't really. We went to church. We don't think any of us were that bothered for it, though.
Yeah.
I didn't have that many didn't have that many friends who lived like around near where I lived. So I guess I was a bit of a loner sort of kid. And I think I was maybe more creative because I spent more time by myself. I don't know. I always wanted to do something artistic, like I wanted to paint, but I wasn't very good at that. And I wanted to draw, so I drew a lot of cartoons. I was slightly better at that. But all the while, just finding stuff to occupy myself by myself. Not that it's like some like sad story or anything, but maybe I just generally preferred doing whatever I wanted by myself, because when you have like an older brother and an older sister, they tend to have their own friends, and
yeah,
they get bored of you quickly. So
would you change that if you could, or do you think there's something good to be something good has come from that, the fact that it kind of fired up your creativity?
Sure. I mean, I just had to like find some ways to occupy myself, so it was just a lot of teaching myself how to do things, like whether it was skateboarding or drawing or painting, or even drumming later on was something that my dad taught me to do and I was teaching myself to do. It's, of course, you make the best of whatever situation you have. And like, it wasn't bad growing up, but it's often like that being the youngest. You just have to get on with it.
So was your dad musical?
Yeah, he was a drummer when he was a kid, like when he was 10 or 11, I think he got his first kit. And there's like a family band, in the sense that like it was sort of traditional that everyone learnt an instrument and they would go and play at all the weddings and stuff, like a function band.
Yeah.
So that's where my dad comes from, that tradition of like, maybe not so much writing songs, but just learning covers, the hits of the day.
Yeah.
Like Free or the Beatles or bands like these 70s bands, and going and playing them at weddings and probably earning better money than the kind of money that a lot of bands earn these days at shows.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. I mean, so like growing up in a musical house with older siblings, was you exposed to, I mean, was there music on at home a lot?
Yeah, definitely. Like my mum and dad played music to us when we were tiny, and I think we were all exposed to similar stuff. Like he played a lot of the Smiths and Bowie, 10cc, a lot of 70s sort of music, and I think that has a major effect on the sort of trends that bubble up again within our societies. So the music that your parents like, you initially reject, and then it comes full circle, and you see at the moment now there's a huge resurgence in the 70s in the culture, the way that people dress, even the sound of music today is inspired by it. And it makes me wonder that if the 80s is next, I mean, surely that would work as a sort of timeline.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah. And yeah, so it's funny because these days the music that I make as well is really influenced by that, especially in like lead guitar sounds and stuff. I've definitely got Mick Ronson at the back of my mind when I'm playing some of the stuff that I played on my new record, and that kind of like, for so long it was so uncool to be like to do guitar solos or
yeah,
to have any sort of like showmanship or anything, but I really dug that stuff when I was a kid, and I like to try and do that in my music now, and maybe with a sort of self-conscious wink, and also just kind of celebrating it. I like that stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned Bowie, you mentioned the Smiths, and I think Johnny Marr would definitely tip his hat to Mick Ronson. I think there was like huge influence he's got passed down there. And
definitely.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's stay in the formative years, and I'm going to ask you for track three to tell me the song that reminds you of your time at school, please.
Yeah, so that's Birdhouse in Your Soul by They Might Be Giants.
Okay,
I don't know if you know. Do you know They Might Be Giants?
I do. I know quite a lot about them.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. Are you a fan?
You never know. Yeah, I'm a big fan.
Yeah. Yeah, I had a guest on here. I had a radio DJ and who does talk radio called Bob Mills, and he chose a They Might Be Giants track. He chose Anna Ang. Is it pronounced Anna Ang? Yeah, Anna Ang. Yeah. That anyway. And then he just literally lectured me on the They Might Be Giants for the duration of the podcast, which was an absolute joy, because I think they're criminally underrated, and they get judged on that song alone, and maybe a nod to Istanbul. You know, I'm not comparing them to Fugazi and these influential bands, but some of that early college rock stuff, like Don't Let's Start, it's fucking great.
So good.
And they just kind of got dwarfed by, the REMs and the kind of other college rock bands that went on to become, stadium fillers. But, yeah, I think even, a few years back, they put out a track, what's it called, Dr. Worm, and it's just genius. It just so sounds good. Like it should be on Sesame Street. It's just brilliant. And, they were meant to have been coming over last year to play, and I've never seen them, so I was like, I'm definitely going to go and watch They Might Be Giants. And I've reached out to try and get either of them on here. I'd love to kind of pick their very bizarre minds.
The Johns.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, as much as a lot of the time that band is defined by that track, it's an incredible track, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, Birdhouse was just one of those, oh my God moments, because...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I remember being year 9 in school. Can't remember how old that would have made me, but I remember a friend telling me, "Oh, do you know Malcolm in the Middle? You know that band who did Malcolm in the Middle theme tune? Well, listen to this." And he probably put on a Walkman or something, like a portable CD player where you couldn't move because it would just skip. Yeah. Couldn't walk with it. And you put that on, and just remember, I remember being outside science, we were queuing up for science class, and just listening, just going, this is a world of music in one song.
yeah. Oh, what a fantastic shout. Well, in regards to school, how did you find it?
School? Hated it. I don't know. It was only late into school that I really had a group of friends that I really stuck with, and because I was so obsessed with skateboarding, I just hung out with my brother and his friends who were in 4 years above me, and then of course when they left and I was in year 8, I was like, ah, now I have to find friends that are my own age. And I never really succeeded until more the end of high school. I was sort of like, friendships were kind of like transient or passing, or you know what I mean? Like, again, it's not like a sob story. I very much was the maker of my own destiny there. If I didn't want to be friends with people, I wasn't. So, like, for that reason, it was maybe difficult in some ways. But I think everyone finds high school difficult. I mean, it's the start of, like, it's the start of your real personality seeping in. I guess it's like the mix of your sort of naive self and then the side of you that's more aware of the world and sort of maybe what's wrong with it. So, like, you have this big clash internally, and I don't think it's a fun time for anyone. But, I mean, yeah, I can't complain.
So towards the end, was that when you sort of found your tribe?
Yeah, that was like when I was 14, 15. That was when I joined my first band and I started playing drums. And, you know, I just said to somebody that I overheard, they were looking for a drummer, and I was like, I play drums, which was, well, a total lie, of course. I didn't play drums. I just went home that night and learned one beat with my dad, and then went in the next day, and I was like, there you go, there's one beat. Can you play anything else? No, I mean, what else do you need? It's just... So that was the start of me getting into music, and yeah, finding my tribe, if you like. From there, we did lots of covers. We covered They Might Be Giants and Flaming Lips, and we even did like the Super Mario theme, I think, at one of the Battle of the Bands.
What Flaming Lips tune do you do?
She Don't Use Jelly.
Perfect.
We saw them a lot as well at the Apollo. They're amazing. And from there, I started trying to like write my own songs. And I think my band at the time were having none of it. Like, what's the drummer doing trying to play guitar? And so they all quit. And that's where I started to really take on the other roles for myself.
That's a great way of looking at it. The rest of the band quit, or did they just get rid of you? How are you going to view that? Yeah, they all just quit.
I never thought of that before.
Oh, brilliant. Okay, well, in them formative years as well, I'm going to ask you for track four. Please, to tell me the first record you remember buying from a record shop.
So, I've written Flatbeat by Mr. Wazzo. Yeah. And I'm pretty sure that was the first tape I ever bought. It was either that or My Name Is by Eminem, which had the instrumental version on the other side, so you could, like, try and rap along. I mean, since I've sort of definitely gone off Eminem, he's turned out to be a proper wrong'un. But I still like this Mr. Wazzo track. I mean,
yeah,
it just takes me back to being just really not excited by music, but just excited by the association of the song.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's such an exciting sort of track, and it makes you feel like probably the music video. That's probably why I liked it. The music video with the puppet and I don't know. I think when you're young, you have a much more primal sort of appreciation for music. You know, there's no intellectual thought about it, like, oh, these chord changes or these words. It's just like, yeah, this feeling. I want that feeling again.
Listen up. I've only got another new sponsor. Egg Fried. It's this super cool clothing label. And if you're into sort of skating and street art and gigging and kind of like really cool art and throwing a little bit of Asian culture and the designer's kind of weird sense of humour in the mix, then you're pretty much there with the wonderful world that is eggfried.com. Now, they do these amazing punchy kind of graphic tees, hoodies and sweatshirts, beautiful art prints, as well as this, they have a denim range, all handmade in-house, all supporting the slow fashion movement. Not only that, they've given you a discount code, 10% off when you head over to eggfried.com. Just use the code EGGSALAD, EGGSALAD, save 10%. Go and get lost in the world of Egg Fried. Also, they've got a new kids range, and it's called Small Fried, and it's super cool, super cute. And again, it's all over there in this wonderful world. Go and get involved at eggfried.com. And you touched upon the fact that you was exposed to stuff like Bowie and the Smiths, which I'm going to sort of focus on for a little bit here. And as a southerner looking up at Manchester and being at the age I am, you know, being 18 or 17, 18 in 1989, you know, there was nowhere I wanted to be more than Manchester. Mm. It looked so exciting. But is that kind of rich musical history something that you're exposed to at a sort of young age? You know, it might just be a very casual thing that I'm getting it wrong, but I just presume that in Liverpool everybody's just, you know, here's the Lars, here's the Beatles, like, enjoy. And like, and obviously there's so much in Manchester, and I just wonder, is it something that sort of filters through? Because I guess where I am in Essex, we've got Depeche Mode and the Prodigy, and we're fiercely proud of that. I just wondered, is it something that in them formative years, you feel the weight of it, you know, in the town you live in?
I think more than feeling the weight of it, you literally can't escape it.
Yeah.
It's on every street corner, there's like plaques about different places where Tony Wilson said this here. Like, and so really growing up, I sort of rejected it all. I mean, I like the music and I like some of the music anyway, but all this like factory revival and just constantly looking back was something that, you know, as a teenager and as a 20 something in Manchester, me and my friends actively rejected. So I think when you're actually growing up in that place, it's very different. I imagine that lots of people in Liverpool are sick of the Beatles, you know,
yeah,
or like sick of the Lars. And for everybody else, it's just like this romantic idea of what it would be like.
Absolutely.
But in the same time, I did have a major obsession with the Smiths growing up, mostly just because of Johnny Marr.
Yeah.
I've always been attracted to, you know, guitarists, and you know his style is just so inimitable because if you try and play like Johnny Marr, you'll just sound like you're trying to be Johnny Marr. You won't even sound like him. Yeah. And even Johnny Marr doesn't sound like Johnny Marr anymore.
Yeah.
But I think probably on purpose, because he doesn't want to sound like the Smiths. But that era, it's just so special to me. Obviously, yeah. I can sort of discount the Morrissey part.
So
I can just sort of switch that off now.
So that's interesting, because I like to ask guests about that. You said, you know, a moment ago that, you know, Eminem's, you know, ended up kind of saying some stuff that it's not so cool. And obviously, Morrissey's done very much the same. And in this podcast, speaking to so many people of, like, artists that they were exposed to in sort of formative years, you know, people would mention Michael Jackson a lot. And so I just always like to ask artists if they can separate the art from the person and still enjoy the art.
It really depends on who it is, what they've done, and most of the time, no. I think I can listen to the Smiths because it's not just Morrissey. Mm-hmm. I honestly don't listen to Morrissey's solo stuff. I'm not listening to him, and I don't want to, like, the song is a sort of entity in itself. Michael Jackson, never really listened that much to him anyway.
Yeah,
no. Largely, I mean, you have to believe the voices that speak up against people when they speak up. They wouldn't do it otherwise. That's my view of it.
Right.
And there's so much music out there by so many really great people that do so much good for other people. Why not give your time to them?
Absolutely. You know? Absolutely. Track 5. The song that soundtracked your years clubbing.
But I had to put it in there. It's This Charming Man by the Smiths. And because I suppose the question, like, clubbing, like, I never really clubbed. But, you know, I kind of wish I could have done. Like, speaking of that nostalgic Manchester thing, like the Hacienda scene, it looks incredible. Like, I wish I could have done that stuff. I was just too young. Like, getting pilled up and listening to that kind of music emerging for the first time. And, you know, it must have just felt like an epiphany, like, every night. I would have loved to do that. But instead, what my generation had in Manchester was, like, a club called Fifth Avenue and another club called 42s. And it was, like, this first wave of Manchester revivalism. And you just go and you pay, like, a quid for a vodka Red Bull. And you just wait for this charming man to come on because it's the only song that you like on the playlist of these Manchester hits. And so it has significance for me because, you know, me and my friends, like, would literally wait. And, you know, you would go there to try and meet girls, maybe, or, you know, being underage and in a club trying to meet girls never worked. I was never confident enough to talk to anybody. But then that song would come on and you would dance. And you just couldn't get over how good the guitar riff was and how it won you over every time. And, you know, I still get that feeling. It's funny, there's the Hatful of Hollow version and then there's the album version of This Charming Man. And I don't know which one I like more because there's the sort of like... Oops. There's like the swing version. And then there's like the sort of like punk rock version. I guess it's cool to have like the different moods. That's what I wish, like, you know, like there's no Peel sessions anymore.
Yeah.
And what's weird about the sessions is that, like, one, the songs would have that different version, like with the swing tempo, and they would do like overdubs and they would double track vocals and stuff. Like, I like live music as much as the next person, but I kind of wish they would go back and really re-record that song.
Yeah.
That was cool. That was cool, I think.
It's, Hatful of Hollow was my first Smiths record. And oh, so really? I hadn't heard the intro. I'd just heard that. Dun, 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 like, I hadn't heard the lick of Johnny.
Yeah.
You know, until, like, it got reissued with, like, a bit of a Smiths resurgence, you know, in 1991. And I was just like, wow, what's this? And it was just hearing that opening guitar solo was just like, wow. And it, obviously, it just sounds so much bigger and it hasn't really got that sort of swing, you know, as you said, like, sort of vibe to it. And it was just like hearing a completely different song, which is great because, as you say, you've got two versions of an absolute, you know, belter of a record. So you mentioned earlier that you know, you was never confident as a young lad to go and talk to girls. I get that. I was the same, you know. And
still not there.
Well, what I want to ask is, like,
it's okay. I'm engaged.
As a person,
talk to one girl.
Are you? I mean, obviously, you've since gone on to have success in a band, and obviously, as, you know, in your own right. Would you say, like, You're confident now as a person?
I think I've learned how to be confident as myself, or at least secure within myself to some degree. As in, like, I can accept the fact that I'm not a very confident person, you know? and that doesn't trouble me like it maybe used to. I used to maybe berate myself for not being confident enough or not being opinionated enough or something. And I think that's better than growing in confidence, because I don't even like confident people. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They're so annoying. And that was probably what was troubling me growing up. Like, oh, I don't want to be so shy, but I don't want to be like them.
Yeah.
So just being comfortable with yourself is something that I do appreciate, being, you know, slightly older. 31, what does that mean? Does that mean I'm old? No, maybe
mate.
Not. I'm older than I was.
Correct. What about, I mean, you know, aside from the teaching, you know, music is famously a very tough and competitive industry.
For sure.
So with that in mind and hearing what you said about confidence, I'm just interested in drive? Would you say you're driven?
I think that's probably my best quality. if I had what any, is that like, I think when I was growing up, I was just a bit of a quitter in a lot of ways. Like in school, like I definitely could have put more effort in, and like jobs that I've had growing up, I definitely could have put more effort in, you know. But then when it came to music, that's when I found that sort of drive and like sort of some sort of sense of tenacity. And it's not just in like, I'm going to succeed, because like I'm not even that successful, and I don't know if I ever will be, and I don't care. It's more about like the tenacity of like, I'm going to finish this song, or like I'm going to make this record, or I'm going to learn how to do this. So like I'm extremely driven in some ways, and I think like, as you say, music's so competitive and it's hard to make a living, but I'm not competing against other musicians. I'm just competing against my own schedule.
Sure.
So like a lot of musicians have to fight against their job and, you know, their holiday hours so that they can afford to go to gigs and stuff. And it's the same for me. Like the more time that I have to spend, like, I don't know, teaching people English, or which I really enjoy, or the more time that I have to spend like saving money for this or that, like it makes me want to make music even more. It's like, I don't know, maybe I just have the fear of death in me. Like, yeah, you're only here once and you've got to make the most of it. And I don't know. I'm constantly maybe a little bit scared that if I don't write, then I'll forget how. And I'm constantly writing little things in my phone, little things that might start off songs, humming little musical ideas. It just makes the hard stuff that I have to do in life seem a little bit more worth it or something.
I hear you. Favorite.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Song from an artist from your home county, please.
I like that this question was county and not country. Yeah. I thought it might have been like a spell check thing.
No,
I was like, no. I'll go with county.
The English teacher in you has nailed that, because of the 300 plus episodes of this podcast I've done, normally at this point, 250 of them so far, I've gone, county? Oh, fuck, I thought you said country. So yeah, you've nailed it. You're one of the few.
Oh, I feel really special. And I chose a song from 10cc, and I bought a flat guitar tutor, depending on how you read it, because it's obviously 10cc. They grew up in Prestwich, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. And so that's either Greater Manchester or Lancashire, depending on what decade you're talking about. And that's me. And I love this song because he literally names the types of chords as he goes through the piece of music. And he turns those into very sort of evocative lyrics. So it's a really nerdy song in some ways. But if you didn't know anything about like the music theory side, you could just enjoy it as a perfectly good piece of music.
Yeah.
And it's just like 10cc are so inventive and underrated and brilliant as songwriters, and I'm proud that I came from the same county, you know? County, great word.
Was that something that you was exposed to from your dad's record collection?
Yeah, and my mum's. I think my mum might have been the bigger 10cc fan. So like ELO and 10cc and like... I think they even had like Godly and Creme, like best ofs yeah. and stuff. And yeah, it's just them all over, my parents all over. And I think I connected with that record collection more than my brother or sister. They liked some elements. My sister was more into the 80s stuff. And my brother liked some of the stuff that I did. But I was so much more impressionable than them, I think. I just like whatever my parents thought was good, it'll be like, oh, well, this must be good because they like it. So it means that I got really into prog as well for a while.
Yeah. Okay. Last track, you can play DJ now and tastemaker and turn people onto something new. I'm going to ask you, please, for a song that many people don't know that you would like them to hear.
Sure. Well, the song I've chosen is... Message Personnel or Message Personnel by Françoise Hardy or Françoise Hardy, depending on whatever accent you want to use. And I don't know if not everyone's heard it, but being an English person, my French girlfriend introduced me to this song, and of course I'd never heard it. She's not huge in this country. And it's incredibly like melodramatic and very sort of... romantic, and it has the whole first part of the song is just this spoken word, which is a personal message, obviously from the title, to a lover. And if you actually read the translation of it, it's incredibly like harsh, and it's quite a painful read, and that's what makes the whole song just feel that much more like, I don't know, significant. It's like a doomed love story, and it has one of the best drum like intro fills that I've ever heard. It's like pure 70s soft rock power.
So what we do is we put together a Spotify playlist as well to accompany the podcast, so people can go and listen to all of the tracks that we've spoke about today, and some of your music as well, obviously. And so we're just about to enter May 2021, and it feels hopefully that there's an air, a more positive, feeling in the air that, hopefully, in the coming months we'll be able to kind of get back to a sense of normality that will involve us being able to connect more with others and hug our friends and dancing at clubs and gigs and such. What are you looking forward to this year, and what's going to be happening professionally?
Well, getting married pretty soon. Looking forward to getting married.
Amazing.
To my wife. So that's going to be good. And maybe we can have some kind of a celebration with my family. I'm going to meet my little nephew that I've not met yet because of the pandemic. So those are like, personal things I'm really looking forward to. And professionally, I'm looking forward to playing some shows. We're playing July 1st at Victoria in Dalston. Hope I got that right.
It is Victoria in Dalston. It's a great venue.
Yeah, I don't think I've been. And 2nd of July, we're playing Deaf Institute in Manchester. So that's going to be great because I've never headlined there before. Maybe a couple of festivals in the summer, just pretending to be normal humans,
Yeah, wonderful. And for people that want to keep up to speed on those shows and releases and everything else, where's the best place to kind of keep up to speed with what you're up to?
I quite like Instagram. At Francis Long on Instagram. It's the same on Twitter. I like those too. Yeah. I'm less on Facebook, but I think kind of people just are generally less on Facebook. And of course, I've got a website, francislong.com. Managed to find a good handle that I could just put on everything. It's quite simple. Yes.
Well, if it's cool with you, when we put this out, we tag you in it. So if people aren't following you already, then they can go and do that. And
thanks so much. That'd be amazing.
Everything that you're up to. Thank you so much for your time today. It's been really
and
lovely
you.
Hearing you talk
yeah.
about records.
No, it's been great talking to you too, and good to meet another They Might Be Giants fan.
Absolutely. Take it easy. Thank you so much. There you go. Wonderful. Lovely, lovely chat. People, go and check out the Spotify playlist. And then when you get to Birdass in Your Soul, then click on the little thing that says They Might Be Giants, and then just press play and let it play, and let it keep playing and playing and playing. Because it's glorious. And they're as touched upon on this podcast, they're massively underrated and they're great. Yeah, so many bands on there. Go get stuck into Fugazi. Oh gosh, yeah, go and get stuck right in there, because there's a whole world of raucous delight to be enjoyed there. I'll be back next time. In the meantime, tell your friends about this podcast. If you see us on the socials, give us a share, a retweet, all of that stuff. And as mentioned at the beginning, go and explore the back catalogue, or best still, subscribe. And each week you'll find that one, two, maybe three, sometimes four episodes will pop up on your listening device. And yeah, and then it's down to you if you choose to listen or not. I'll be back next time. Stay safe, lovely people. Everything you need to know about this podcast, offthebeatandtrackpodcast.com. Be excellent to each other, and I'll see you soon. Bye-bye.
It's Off the Beat and Track Podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whiffin.